So are we good to go now?
No, it needs to be on blue. Now you should be.
Okay.
Seeing if we're getting a text. You should be good to go. The blue light is on.
Okay. Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Finance and Revenue Committee to order on January 21st, 2021. And we will, we're having this meeting remotely because we are in the middle of a pandemic. And those in the public who want to observe the meeting, there will be no public testimony today, but for those who would like to observe, you can find the link on OLIS. And I'm sure we're all getting used to this by now. So I want to start out with an organization. I will open an organizational meeting for the purpose of introducing members and staff. So I will start with Senator Finley. Please introduce yourself and pass it on to the next worthy committee member.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, I'm Lynn Finley from Senate District 30, representing 36% of the state, Southeast Oregon, a swath through Central Oregon into North Central Oregon, down the Deschutes River to the Dalles. I represent part of Wasco County, all of Jefferson, part of Deschutes, all of Wheeler, all of Grant, all of Harney, out of Malheur, all of Lake, all of Baker, and part of Clackamas on top of Mount Hood, where I have no residence, and on top of Mount Jefferson in Marion County. So it's my privilege to be here, and I will now turn it over to Senator Riley. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you.
Thank you. And I have Senate District 15, which is nowhere near as big as Senator Finley's. I have the cities of Hillsboro, Cornelius, Forest Grove, and North Plains, and a lot of farms around them. And I'm proud to have some of those farms. I grew up on a farm, so I feel at home here. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Wagner.
Thank you, Senator Riley. I think the chair's direction was worthy, so I'm not sure that I meet the qualifying standard, but I'll do my best. So State Senator Rob Wagner, I represent Senate District 19, which is Southwest Portland, Lake Oswego, Tualatin, West Lynn, the incorporated cities of River Grove and Durham, as well as a section of King City in the metro area. I have four teenagers at home, so this is a nice respite for me. So I hide out on the computer here, and it's really great to see all of you and to get a chance to work with you this session as well. And with that, as I'm scanning.
Senator Boquist would go next. He's joining us by phone.
Senator Boquist by phone.
Well, you notice I didn't make the worthy mark here, so that's appropriate for me. Thank you, Madam Chair, Senator Wagner. I'm Senator Brian Boquist. I represent the rural portions of five counties along the western edge of the Willamette Valley. I am on the phone because they are rural, and we either have satellite links or Wi-Fi wavelength out here, and with everybody at home in the pandemic, connections are pretty poor. But I'm here by phone and happy to be on the committee. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And welcome to all the committee members. My name is Ginny Burdick, and I represent the people of Senate District 18, which is West Portland and Tigard. And I don't have nearly as many counties as Senator Finley, but I do represent portions of Multnomah, Washington, and a little tiny bit of Clackamas County. So welcome, you all. And next, we'll move to staff introductions. So Chris, why don't you start us out?
Sure. Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Chris Alanak. I've been with the office since 2006, and I've been in my current role since 2018. So I thought we could just go through, have each of the economists and committee assistants and introduce themselves and talk a little bit about their areas that they cover. And so we can start off with, I believe Mazin should be on the call or part of the meeting.
I am here, if you can hear me. Mazin Malik. I started with legislative revenue in 2002. Good to see all the faces again. And Madam Chair. Before that, I spent about 10 years at the Department of Transportation. And from that, I have a number of areas, portfolios I work with. Transportation is one of them, with sub-portfolios of highway, light rail, heavy rail, passenger rail, aero, marine, DMV, and the like. In addition to that, I have some of the SEN taxes. I don't have all the SEN taxes anymore. I have alcohol, which is both distilled liquors and beer and wine, and cider and seltzer and so on. And that's the OLCC stuff. In addition to the OLCC, they've new role of doing regulating marijuana. I do the marijuana taxes, marijuana regulation of taxation and so on. The OLCC also, part of what I do with them is also the bottle bill. And then I go away from OLCC to the PUC, energy and electricity and so on. Also do some environmental work, DEQ. Transient lodging tax, also still one of the things for both state and local. I do deal with that. I also deal with your revenue from bonding and debt finance. And in addition, just overall fees and penalties and fines from courts and the court system. And overall taxation for state and local governments, when that is nowhere else with other colleagues. And that's what I do.
Chris?
Okay. How about Day? Are you there, Day Beck?
All right.
There we go.
Just unmuted. This is Dave Beck, and I work on school finance, cigarette taxes, unemployment taxes, medical provider taxes, and I support Chris in terms of macro and economic analysis related issues. Thank you.
Okay. Kyle?
All right, I'm Kyle Easton. I've been with the Legislative Revenue Office since 2014. The areas I cover right now are the personal income tax and then also the tax credit review process. So I may see some of you in other committees as well as part of that tax credit review process, as those bills make their way through the policy committees first on their way to the Revenue Committee.
Jamie, are you with us?
Hi, this is Jamie McGovern, and I cover property taxes and related taxes, which tend to include forest and timber taxes. I also work on what might be called communication taxes. So there's cell phone taxes, broadband taxes, 911 taxes, and I work on estate taxes. Nice to meet you.
And our newest economist is Kate.
Hello, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. I am Kate Harger. I started at LRO in December of 2018, so this will be my third session. And my primary areas are corporate taxation as well as the CAT. And I also do the broadcasters and opportunity zones. So thank you.
So next we have Corinne, who is the office manager. I don't know if she has a mic.
Can you see me through the blue man? No? Yes. So I'm Corinne. I'm the office manager, and I take care of all anything bill related going through all of our committees. I supervise the assistants, and I've been with the LRO since 2008 and the legislature since 1998.
Okay, Okay. So the next group we have, in the past, our session staff consisted of two committee assistants and a receptionist, where one committee assistant was assigned to each committee at the House Revenue and Senate Revenue. This time, because of the circumstances, well, we don't need a receptionist, so we have three committee assistants, and we're going to double team each committee on a kind of a rotating basis so that we can handle all of the tech and try to make this run as smoothly as possible. So first up there, we have Donita.
Hello, my name's Donita Bruce. I am new to the Legislative Revenue Office. I'm very excited to be here and meet everyone and support the Senate Revenue and Finance Committee any way that I can. It's nice to meet everyone.
And then we have Manny.
Hello, everyone. My name is Emmanuel, but I go by Manny for short. I'm extremely excited, like Donita and my other colleagues, Haley, to be here and to support the legislative community committee. And thank you for having me.
And then to round out the LRO team, we have Haley.
Hi, my name is Haley. I am new to LRO. I have worked in other agencies prior to this, so I'm very excited to dip my hands into this line of work. So this is my first session, and I'm very excited to be here. Thank you.
So that's the entire LRO team, Chair Burdick.
Okay, excellent. I'm very happy to be working with you all again. I used the Finance and Revenue Committee from, I think, 2007 to 2015, and very, very happy to be back. This is a really, really competent team that just does wonderful work for the state of Oregon. So I appreciate you all. And since this is the first time I've done a remote meeting, I think I'm supposed to call the roll. Is that correct, Corinne or Chris?
Generally, we try to do that, and then members will respond so-and-so here by video or audio.
Okay. Everyone else knows the drill, but you say present by video or by phone. So Corinne or whoever is calling the roll, if you would do that now.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Burdick?
Present by video.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Present by telephone.
Senator Finley?
Present by video.
Senator Riley?
Present by video.
Senator Wagner?
Present by video.
Okay, we are all here. So I will close the organizational meeting and open up a work session for adoption of committee rules. And Chris, you want to just give us a 30,000-foot summary of the rules in front of us?
Sure, Madam Chair, members of the committee. The rules are in the meeting materials. They were posted there yesterday, I think. So hopefully you've had a chance to go through them. And they are, for the most part, the same as 2020, just a couple of changes that I just wanted to touch on. The first one is under item two, meetings. The last sentence there, the word may has been changed to shall, given the current tech situation we're in. And so it reads, the chair shall allow members of the public to testify by telephone or other electronic means. That just coincides with how meetings are being held for the time being. And then the other change is some language that got moved from item 16, which is impact statements, and to item 14. And the sentence pertains to amendments, and it's basically saying that only written amendments prepared by LC can be considered by the committee. That sentence used to be in the item 16 under impact statements. It's gone now, and it is now in item 14. Under the amendments deadline. And I think there is just, the intent is just to streamline that the impact statement portion refers only to the fiscal and the revenue impact statements. But there has been some question there because people see that that wording is gone, and the concern was that it was deleted. but it isn't. It's just moved up to item 14, the amendments deadline. And that's pretty much it, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. Senator Boquist, could we have a motion?
Yes, ma'am. I move the adoption of the committee rules, and then I'll speak to my motion briefly, Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator Boquist has moved the adoption of the committee rules. Discussion, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to thank the chair because we've actually worked on this committee before together, and that's good because as Senator Wagner made a mention, when all of the minority members voted against the rules on the floor of the Senate, the recourse is lawsuits. And I don't think a session goes by when we don't pass a revenue bill and somebody challenges us in court. So the more testimony that we can have from the public, the better for all of us. And Madam Chair, you've been good at doing that, even on rules committees when we've agreed. I also point out that given some of us are on telephones and other things, that when the recording is on there, I just want to remind the public, you know, to listen, and we will do our best to identify our names when we vote so everybody knows who's voting what and where, so the public can see it. Two minor things I see in here, as Chris mentioned, some things moving around. It's always good for communications to make sure we sort of know, or we do know, where the amendments and the bills come from under item 10. And likewise, if we get through the session without a minority report, it will be a record, Madam Chair. So once again, communications is always the best thing, even if we don't agree on something. And I look forward to working with the other committee members. And I just have to tell you, regardless of what we do, someone's going to sue us on a tax bill before this is over. So working together and communicating effectively in these interesting circumstances is going to be keen. Thank you, Madam Chair, and happy to vote yes.
Thank you, Senator Boquist, for those very constructive comments. These are interesting times we're in, and we just have to adapt to make sure that the public is fully included in what we do. And I'm committed to that, and I know all you are too. Normally I just go if there's objections, but I think we'll have to call the roll on all of our motions here. So would you call the roll, please? Somebody needs to call the roll. Is that Manny?
Yeah, sorry.
There we go.
Do I just call the roll call again?
Yes.
All right, thank you. Chair Burdick, yay or nay?
Aye.
Vice Chair Boquist?
Yes, by telephone.
Senator Finley?
Senator Finley votes yes.
Yes. Senator Riley, yay or nay?
Aye.
And Senator Wagner, yay or nay?
Wagner's yes.
Thank you. The committee rules are passed. We're going to skip to the next work session, our continuation of work session, for possible introduction of committee measures. We have two committee measures here. Chris, can you summarize those for us?
Sure. The first one, LC 2380, creates a task force to analyze the assessment and taxation services of local governments, basically the funding of local governments. And the second one, LC 3269, it's currently drafted as an LRO study on potential methods of addressing the SALT limitations. And this is in response to a recent IRS ruling where As a result of the Federal Tax Cut and Jobs Act, there was a limitation on the federal deductibility of state and local taxes. The IRS has come out with the ruling that there are some workarounds on how to do that relating to certain businesses, basically pass-through entities. So there are some potential mechanisms that your committee or the legislature can explore on basically changing the tax structure potentially in a revenue-neutral way for Oregon, but reducing the federal tax liability for certain taxpayers. So right now it's just a study bill, because all of those machinations are too complicated to put into a bill, and it's really up to the committee deliberations. But that's what it's trying to get at.
Okay. Are we able to make a motion for both of them, Chris, at
yes.
once?
Yes.
Okay. Senator Boquist, would you feel comfortable doing that?
Yes, ma'am. I move LC 2380, dated 11-2020, and LC 3269, dated 12-9-20, be introduced, and I will speak to my motion.
Senator Boquist has moved LC 2380 and LC 3269 to be introduced as Senate Finance and Revenue Committee bills. To your motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As Chris pointed out, these are works in progress to come before the committee for a resolution and future public discussion, and the vote today is simply introduction. It's not whether a member is in favor or opposed to the legislative concept. It just gives us a working set of documents. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And thank you for giving the speech I should have given at the beginning. Okay, would you please call the roll, Manny?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Vice Chair Boquist, yay or nay?
Yes, by telephone.
Senator Finley, yay or nay?
Senator Finley votes yes.
Senator Riley, yay or nay?
Aye.
Senator Wagner, yay or nay?
Senator Wagner is yay.
And Madam Chair Burdick, yay or nay?
Burdick votes yes. Okay, the bills are introduced, and now we will close the work session and move into our informational meeting about recent Oregon law, tax law changes. Committee, because we all have revenue experience, most of us on the revenue committee, and in Senator Wagner's case, very detailed experience in a previous life. So I decided not to do the usual informational meeting about the tax structure itself, you know, the basic information about the tax structure. Instead, I asked the LRO to focus on recent tax bills that we've passed as a body, dating back to 2013 with the new pass-through tax reduction, and just to talk about that and the CAT tax and any other new tax systems that we have, because I think we'll, as a committee, we'll be looking at those very carefully to see if they need mid-course corrections. So, Chris.
So, Madam Chair, members of the committee, in OLIS, in the meeting materials, there is a document, a one-pager, that is just a list of all of the changes, kind of structured by tax, and you have all of the staff on the phone to answer any questions that you have on any of the detail. But I thought it's almost a list of what the committee's been up to while you were gone. And so starting with the personal income tax, we do have in 2013, there was the creation of the preferential rates for pass-through entities. That's the lower rate structure, as low as 7% for certain non-passive or active income. And then that policy was expanded to include sole proprietors in 2018. Another policy change was the senior medical deduction changing to a means-tested subtraction. That is a policy that the committees had worked on for several sessions. And in the 2013 special session, it got moved from an itemized deduction to a means-tested subtraction. The difference being an itemized deduction means you have to itemize your returns. A subtraction was available to all taxpayers. Then you also had rate reductions for the first three personal income tax rates, and this was part of the Student Success Act. And those rates went from 5, 7, and 9 down to 4.75, 6.75, and 8.75. You also had a means testing of the personal exemption credit so that taxpayers over $100,000 if single or $200,000 if joint no longer got the credit. And then in 2017, the feds passed the Tax Cut and Jobs Act. And part of the impact there and the response by the legislature, that part of that involved the SALT cap, the state and local tax cap, which is related to one of the LCs you just introduced. And then there was a disconnect from the pass-through entity deduction at the federal level. This is a 20% deduction. And a lot of that policy debate focused on that federal deduction versus the Oregon policy. So those were the personal, trying to identify major versus minor. There are a lot of other changes to all of these tax programs, but at just a high level, those are some of the main changes to the personal income tax. So I thought we could pause there to see if anybody had any questions about any of those changes. I think a lot of these issues will be getting into more detail as the committee starts to hear bills, and then we may have some more detailed overview or discussion or orientation, if you will, of the individual policies, but that would probably align with the committee action as you move forward.
Okay, committee, if you have questions, there's a raise your hand icon that would be most useful. And Senator Boquist, you can just barge right in. Okay, I don't see any questions, so why don't you move on to the corporate, and then we can have questions on all of it, Chris.
Okay. So then the corporate income tax, one of the big changes here was how Oregon income is apportioned, or how income is apportioned to Oregon, how federal income. And for many decades, the state was in a cost of performance kind of structure where the allocation depended on where the costs were used to structure or to provide the services. This is for intangibles and services. Tangible products were always apportioned according to this market-based notion. And federal income would be apportioned to Oregon based on Oregon single sales. The intangibles, it had been cost of performance, but in 2017, we moved to a market-based system. And that would align with the tangible apportionment. We also had a bill that there was a lot of concern about the single sales factor. The state chose to confirm the single sales factor. Over the past 5 years, the state created and then ultimately repealed tax haven provisions. These were these listed jurisdictions about tax shifting. And part of that repeal was in response to the Tax Cut and Jobs Act, tying to some of those provisions, kind of lined up with repealing the tax provision, at least from certain perspectives. Then you have interstate broadcaster taxation, and that's something you'll hear, that's a big issue. You'll be hearing more about that, I think, next week. And then lastly, the 7%, the corporate income tax is two brackets. You have a 6.6 and a 7.6, and that top bracket was expanded and allowed for some of the revenue due to the higher rate to go to the rainy day fund as continuing funds for the RDF.
Okay, Chris, since, over the years, ever since it was passed in 2013, there have been both federal and state amendments and changes to the pass-through tax. So can you just talk in a little bit more detail about the original tax reduction and for example, the fact that you can't take deductions, the rate, the revenue impact of it, and just go into a little bit more detail on the underlying 2013 pass-through tax deduction.
Sure. I think I'm going to hand this off to Kyle. He's the one that's handling the income tax. So I think Kyle's still on here, unless we've had a glitch.
I think I see his icon there.
Yes, Madam Chair. Again, Kyle Easton, Legislative Revenue Office. And as part of this discussion, we do have a kind of a presentation we put together in years past, and I'm working on getting that updated as well. That can give a little more detailed information related to the reduced rates for pass-throughs. And Chris might be able to give greater context of how it passed at that time in the legislature, part of other discussions that were ongoing. But in terms of to give you a sense of the size or the magnitude of the pass-through rates. What we've seen initially in the first year in tax year 2015, the revenue impact was roughly around $70 million. And that was initially, we saw that coming in a bit low. And then by the second year, when we saw taxpayers actually begin to utilize the reduced rates more, we started to get closer to that $100 million in terms of a revenue impact. And we're talking about, roughly speaking, 20,000 taxpayers per year as well are taking advantage of this. In tax year 2017, again, we were pretty much right in line, close to $100 million. And then in 2018, the initial data that I'm looking at here, we've jumped up to closer to that 110, maybe up to 115 million dollars for the year. And in part, that's reflective of the special session expansion of the reduced rates, making that available to sole proprietorships as well. But as Chris was saying, again, the importance here, or it's important to remember that this is going to be for business owners. There are some requirements for taking these reduced rates, and it's going to be for non-passive income. So this is going to be where the requirement of the taxpayer to be active in the pass-through entity, and for there to be one employee as well. But to your point, Madam Chair, in terms of the deductions, how that works is this is really a opportunity for a taxpayer to opt into these reduced rates. And when a taxpayer opts into these reduced rates, they cannot use this pass-through income that it's getting the reduced rates on. They can't use deductions against that. So it really becomes a choice for the taxpayer to decide, well, is it better for me to go through Oregon's standard, I guess, what I'll say is the standard tax process where they can use their deductions as well, or can I use those deductions to offset other types of income? Maybe my spouse has wage income, and then I can use this non-passive pass-through income and apply it to the reduced rates. So it's really for the taxpayer, it can only benefit them, but it is an opt-in type of opportunity.
Thank you for that. Do we have data? Have we had enough time pass that we have data on the sole proprietor? As I recall, the estimated revenue impact was around, wasn't it $11 million or something like that? How close did that come to reality?
Yes, Madam Chair, that is correct. Yeah, I think we were right around that revenue impact. I'm actually going through that right now. It does look like, I don't want to get ahead of myself, but it does look like it there isn't a surprise there. I will have more information on that. I am actually working through that information as we're receiving it from Department of Revenue right now.
Great. Okay, thank you. One of the frustrating things about this job is there's always a lag between the estimated revenue and the real revenue. It's just the nature of the beast. So are there questions from the committee? I see no questions. Thank you all. We will be hearing more about all of these things, or many of these things, as we get into specific bills down the line. So Chris, is there anything else we need to cover today?
We can stop right there. There's that list in OLIS. In terms of major pieces that have happened in the past, you had a major transportation package passed in 2017. You had the corporate activity tax that was created in 2019, and you have the 1% payroll tax to fund paid family medical leave that was created in 2019.
Okay, I didn't realize I was cutting short your presentation, so feel free to elaborate on any of those.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I had a list of nine. We went through and tried to identify some of the major things. The next item on the list was the tax credit review process. And back in 2013, there were 5 active credits. We're down to 28. There have been a number of changes in there, but the biggest change in that process is beginning with 2015, LRO has been statutorily required to produce a report on the sunsetting tax credits. And Kyle is the current author of that report, and he goes around to the policy committees to help them as the tax credits are farmed out to those policy committees. And then ultimately, the idea there is the tax credits that the policy committees adjust would then be forwarded to the Joint Committee on Tax Expenditures. Property tax, some of the changes there over the past few years, there has been some updating of the central assessment and intangibles piece that was passed in 2015, trying to bring up central assessment and how intangibles are handled, bring that up into a current tech world. The senior deferral program has continued to have modifications, and I think there's a bill before the committee about extending that program. You have the whole transportation package, which was a litany. Mazin handled that. That was a lot there. Fuels taxes, weight miles tax, creation of a privilege tax or payroll tax and a bicycle tax. And then medical provider taxes. Those had often been subject for renewal every biennium. Last time there was significant agreement, and now they're generally in place through about 2025. I mentioned the CAT, paid family medical leave, and then other taxes. The 911 tax got increased and extended to prepaid cell phones. There's, of course, the marijuana tax, which you're familiar with. And then tobacco taxes. The cigarette tax has been increased up to 333. Inhalant delivery systems are now part of the other tobacco products tax, and that was just on the ballot in 2020. To handle those tax increases. So that is a super high level of what the committee was up to while you were elsewhere.
Thank you so much. Are there any questions from the committee? I see a lot of blank screens here. I see no questions, and so I think this completes our agenda. On Monday, we will have a hearing and an informational hearing on the broadcaster tax, correct, Chris? Is that, I'm going from memory here.
Yeah, we're in the process of posting, yeah.
Yeah. So I will, Senator Finley, do you have a question? You're on mute.
I was just gonna say thank you so much. I appreciate your work.
I think that's for you, Chris.
Oh.
Thank you. And thank you, committee. Seeing no other hands raised or objections filed, thank you for your patience as I go through my very first remote hearing. Hopefully it'll be a little smoother on my part next time. And hope you all have a great weekend. So we are adjourned.
Thank you, ma'am.